course. I think it's not completely accidentally that this happened to me and my partner and our family, because I think that these kinds of terrorism investigations target specific movements or specific groups of people and not just anyone. And in this case, I think they are targeted at leftist political movements. But in a way, I think it is accidentally that this happened to us, and could have been also others who are equally active on a political and in political movements. And I think it is, it can be used as a paradigm for how control and surveillance works, and how a state that is moving closer towards I wouldn't call it a police state, but a state that is directed by surveillance and control will behave towards people. And the kinds of bizarre little stories that I tell in my blog are just examples of how this expresses itself. For example, if I tell stories about how we can find out about surveillance because our phones make funny sounds or don't actually connect to the right people when, like, somebody calls Andre, but instead they end up in my mobile phone, something like that. If it happens to you, it is scary if you don't talk about it, if you keep this to yourself. On the other hand, if you do talk about it and you make it public, and instantly becomes a really funny story. But at the same time, it's also very scary. And you can also use it as an example how surveillance is being used to create more fear, which is, I think, what is behind this war on terror and all of this public debate about how terrorism needs to be fought by the state. And instead, I think it is used to create a certain kind of terror in society, to make people be afraid, to make them submit to more control and to give up power that they actually should be having in so-called democracies. There is a long tradition. This specific Article 129A, which is used for terrorism investigations in Germany, has existed for more than 30 years. It was first invented in, I think, 76 against the Red Army faction. The big wave of so-called terrorism in the 70s, which I think has an equivalent in Italy also. And it has a longer history. Even there was a paragraph 129 that was, I think, first started in 1870 and used against socialists in Germany, and there is a, like, it has been changed with time, and then of course during fascism it was all very different, but still the same article is used now for this kind of political repression and for investigations of terrorism. And there is also this tradition of repression against political movements, of course. And that is not new at all. It's just a long line of similar cases that are taking place and normally are not so well known. Or else, if they are well known, then most of the public think, well, right, they are. Of course, terrorists need to be put into prison. And of course, the idea of these investigations is to investigate and to gather information. And as far as I can see, at the moment, this is being used to gather information about political movements. In Germany specifically, it's very interesting if you look at statistics, how many of these investigations are actually taken to court. It's very clear, because only 3-5% of these investigations actually end up in law cases in court. Or other investigations are being dropped before, meaning there is not enough evidence to start a court case, but also meaning that they have used years and years to gather information about the people against which they investigated legally, and then they drop the case. Often the people don't even find out. You have no way to protest against this or to claim your information, your data, your personal information back. And I think that's the main focus of these investigations.
Do you think control is actually efficient, or like being under control? How many, like, let's say, dark zones or the shadows? I think at the end there's much more chaos. this amount of information? Who is able to analyze it and make sense of it? That's the bug of control, in a way. What do you think?
I think that in these specific terrorism cases, it is, well, of course, I'm not really sure, but I imagine that they do have the capacities to analyze the information, because there's huge departments with lots of people who are doing this kind of work. And they do have a lot of money to have computers help them do their work. I have no information about how this is really working, but my impression is that they do have some possibilities to actually use the information that they are gathering. On a whole scale level for all of society, I am wondering about this myself. For example, Germany has just passed the law on data retention, meaning that all information, like all email, all internet traffic, all phone calls will be registered and kept, all these data, for half a year for everybody. And I am surprised very much at what sense does that make, other than maybe having it available if they want to look at certain data. I don't really know how it works. But on the other hand, there was also these surveillance systems like Echelon, which is by the American Army and was put in place a long time ago, and is already also supervising all of these information. And I guess there's automated ways of analyzing this, but I'm absolutely no expert, so I really don't know. All I can say is in like specific cases like ours, when they really want to make a big example of something and to do a terrorism case, which sounds like a very drastic thing in a time when everybody is scared of terrorism and they really think there's people out there who are going to kill lots of people. And so, of course, there's a lot of police capacity being used against people who are accused of terrorism, and then I think they can really probably spend some time to analyze this information. But I'm really only guessing these things. My personal strategy is to go public with the things that are happening to us, and I'm very surprised to see that not more people have been doing this in the past, because I have the feeling it's the only effective method that we have, actually, to not get controlled by fear, because the fear only works if you're alone. And if you think you're going crazy or you are paranoid or you don't talk to people and you don't get support, and by doing this in a public way, there's a lot of people who are expressing support and who actually are very supportive, and there's a lot of people who are very shocked about the stories that we tell them, which makes it easier to deal with these things, because they become more ridiculous the more you talk about them. and on a political level also, I think this really makes sense, because at a time when everybody only on an abstract level is discussing surveillance, to explain to people what this means in everyday life and that this actually concerns normal people just like you and me, or can concern normal people, or that actually it is targeting normal political activists who are, by most people, when they look at me, not considered dangerous, but it's okay to be in the street and to demonstrate and to maybe also publish something, and they will not agree that this should be subjected to police whatever. and that I think that is really important, to interfere with this public discussion and to not just let this happen. There's a specific, so to say, framework or a grid, so to say, that the police have developed, and that they think this specific terrorist group that Andrei is accused of being a member of fits. And the first thing is that people, these terrorists could be people who have an extraordinary political and historical knowledge, have lots of close friends, are able to write analytical texts, have access to libraries to do research in an inconspicuous way. All of this apparently because this group are writing declarations to when they do attacks, and they are so the police stay on a rather high academic level, which is quite ironic, because I personally hardly know anyone who is able to read these declarations. They are long, very, very long papers, very awful to read. It's no fun to, like, I have never managed to finish reading one of these things, because it is painfully blah, and it's not easily written. and very funny turns in their minds that are taking place in these papers. And it's so we were actually all very sorry for the lawyers, because they had to read all of these declarations for the law case, and then to accuse intelligent people of being the authors of that is already not very nice. But I'm coming back to the original question. The next thing is that what they find important is that people are using so-called conspiratorial behavior, such as not taking their mobile phones to some of the meetings that they have, or when they make dates, for example, on the phone, they are not explicit about where and when they will meet someone and what they intend to talk about. And this is no joke, this is really like that in the files. People who called it agented, why don't we go meet in the same bar that we always meet in and have a beer tomorrow evening? And then this is very conspiratorial, because they didn't announce on the phone what they wanted to talk about tomorrow in the bar. Well, one important part also is that they are not part of any specific wing of the left movements. And they said explicitly there's two dominant wings in the German left at the moment. One is autonomist and the other is anti-imperialist. And the people they are looking for should not be member of either the autonomist nor the anti-imperialist wings of the German left. Basically saying that if you're intelligent and you have friends and you don't belong to any specific part of the left movement, then you could be a terrorist. I think it is really worthwhile to want to protect your privacy in any possible way. Even though in our case this was used against Andrei, because already that is considered to be conspiratorial, and that in itself is used as, or they try to use as evidence to prove that he may be a terrorist. We were lucky, because the federal court said that that cannot be used, not in this way, that they consider it legitimate to encrypt emails and to sometimes not take your mobile phone, which was nice. They didn't need to do that, and I don't think that all of a sudden they have turned into this super democratic instrument in our state. But on the other hand, it was nice that it did happen, and I'm very grateful for that. Italy and Germany share a fascist history, and I think that the way police is structured and the way surveillance and control works do have roots in fascist history. Even though also I think it's not a clear one straight line of history, but I'm sure the structures have somehow be transported to the present, and I think it's wise to be aware of that and to make sure that you can protect yourself, because you cannot probably expect too much protection from the state. And this other thing about paranoia, then the idea of this war against terrorism, of course, is to create paranoia and to create fear. I think Italy is the best example. I think you have this strategy of tension in your history when the police have done certain things to create more fear. I use this as an example when I want to explain how this works in Germany, for example, because it's so easy to be seen in Italian history, and so I think you all know very well what this is about and have a good reason to not leave your phone numbers lying around. Call to anyone to not forget about people who are subjected to repression. I'm from far away following the court cases against the activists from Genova, who were just sent to prison for, I think, 10 to 12 years, some of them, and many others who are also subjected to very, very harsh repression measures. And these things are expensive, and they can crush people and make them crazy, and I think it's important to try to help them to not be alone with this. And if it's only through very simple things like blogging about it and being public about it, but then also to go in the street and show very clearly that you will not just accept that.
Thank you.